Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy!
Hello, it is Our Thoughts Tonight. I am Ishik, joined as always by Murat. Our Thoughts Tonight is about absolute truth and are humans capable of obtaining that absolute truth? And that's going to lead into a whole different, you know, bunch of different branches and whatnot. But before we get into that, as always, actually beforehand, this episode will not be in video format for the people who might in the future see a video format. And Twitter, you know, just in Twitter. Yeah. And we have this nice little intro we have now, you know. Before we move on to absolute truth and everything that's juicy, as always, Crucem Sanctum.
Saying that the pizza we ordered is made up of atoms.
The reason why we're laughing is because we just said that twice, but
because I was muted the time before. That's why.
Another thing Sean said was, how it's mostly empty space, even though it's just atoms. I think we're good.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's how it's, although it's made of atoms, it's mostly empty space. So
exactly, dark matter.
No, well, it's not dark matter. It's legit, like nothing, quantum, whatever, like quantum fluctuations within that empty space. So that's something I would have to remember or look it up. But I know that even empty space usually has something, but that's something I'm not really versed in. It might actually just be nothing, because I know quantum fluctuations are an actual thing with, I suppose, the beginning of the universe or whatnot. My point is, though, because that pizza is mostly nothing, you said this, right?
Is it?
Well, you said, how do we know if it's actually nothing, right?
Yeah, how do we know?
Mostly nothing.
Mostly nothing. But the question still stands, how do we even know that? So that's the whole episode today. So I'm going to defend Kant a little bit, right? So... I have to show you guys a video later, but you know, someone in the German idealist sense might argue, hey, what is real doesn't really matter. We can't even figure that out in totality, but we do know that there are certain tools that we use as human beings that help in formulating a reality, right?
Math,
that was one of the most biggest controversies of Kant, that he said that math, even the most simple things like 7 plus 5 equaling 12 is not fundamentally analytically true, right? So these are things because of... All right, before I continue talking... All right. I'll let you... difficulties, you know, our thoughts tonight.
right. What was that?
So Kant has 12 categories, right? These involve negation, space-time, causation, things like that. I can't name all 12 of them. And Schopenhauer, of course, puts them all into one, being causation. But the point is, we humans have certain tools that we require in order to perceive things. For example, I can't perceive that piece of pizza without even understanding the idea of space. Because without the idea of space, that piece of pizza wouldn't be there. I need to have some sort of sense of distance and space and spatial relations, right? So whether that pizza is still there at that point becomes completely conditioned on the fact of my human understanding of space.
I would mention, I think it was Doc Johnson in the 18th century, who in order to establish reality, kicked a rock and said something to the effect of, therefore it is. So I could go over and kick that pizza. It might make a mess of my shoe, but it would establish its, as far as our sensory perceptions go, its reality, space and time.
Well, see, that's the whole thing though, because reality exists only on the condition of that spatial understanding that we already have. So for example, reality might still be reality, but that reality has a little asterisk saying that that requires human abilities of understanding it, right? If we take that away, which we can't as humans.
Why? What do you mean that we can't take that away?
Well, because that's all we know. We know space, time, quantity, quality, you know, causation, shit like that. That is intrinsic in our human being, and that makes our reality, right? Our sense of touch when we kick that rock is based upon our sense of touch by nerves, by illusion,
wow.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Ow. By the way, everybody, that was Sean, and we're joined by Zach, of course. We're kind of a tetrarchy of sorts nowadays. So it's reality, but the question is it everything? And we can't ever really answer that question because that goes beyond human cognition. But the problem is we're entering a sort of era with physics where a lot of our preconceived notions are falling, where particles in physics, subatomic photons, quarks, whatever, these things do not really inhabit space. These do not inhabit a part of human understanding, but we still know it exists by math, which is a whole different issue. But because we know they exist, and they don't make sense logically, it's worrying because, well, at that point, you know, a quark may not be real by our previous notions.
I am so lost, man. I am so lost.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's say it like this. All right. Let's keep it to the sense. It's really weird to articulate, but that pizza is there only because I can interact with it, right? And need it. Juicy atoms in empty space, right? I'm actually
juicy.
Gonna have a slice. Juicy cheese atoms. But if we take the interaction away, it's the whole, if a tree falls in the forest, it doesn't make a sound, right?
Yeah.
It's literally that. And it might actually make a sound, and the cheese might still have a sense of reality, but it might not, there might be more to it. Dimensions is another example, right?
Take away.
I think what it comes down to is what we perceive with our five senses. So we can smell, we can feel, we can taste, we can touch that pizza over there. And that applies to our immediate five senses. And that's the way the human creature determined their universe, or their world, for many, many millenniums.
Yeah.
With the invention of the telescope and with the invention of the microscope, we see, therefore, that little dot in the sky became, with the big enough telescope, it became a galaxy, right? A million more stars or a billion more stars. And so through technology, we've been able to expand our five senses. It's all artificial, of course. But is there something beyond that? Even down to like quarks and subatomic particles. There are those, what do they call them? Those big generators that just toss particles at incredible speeds through the tunnels. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And they've actually perceived these small particles.
Yeah.
So again, we know they exist through artificial means. That artificial means, I don't mean that detrimentally. I mean, it has helped us perceive both the great, the very large and the very small. The question is will we produce more microscopes and more telescopes to make us see farther? We already see,
yeah.
Or we already perceive the edge of the universe, the what I call it, the cosmic haze that's out there that's bombarding us.
Cosmic waterfall.
No, it's not a cosmic waterfall. There's a certain name for it. At the edge of the universe, that we're actually perceiving that as is it a radio wave? Sorry, I'm not of my astrophysics, but they perceive this pulse from the edge of the universe that's still expanding.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's like 14 billion light years away. Right. So anyway, I'll hand it back to that.
Well, the thing is, I'm glad you mentioned 14 billion years, because we only know, for example, the age of the universe because of where we are in space-time, right?
Where are we right now in space-time?
Well, so for example, the universe has been around, I think, 14.6 billion years, right? That is only because we can perceive through light years that far ahead. There might be a that far back in time. That's the thing, because this isn't time. So that's a problem. Well, it's not really a problem, but it doesn't give us the whole picture, because, for example, we can't go far back. Like, we can't go back enough. We just literally can't, to a certain extent.
We can go back as far as that instant after the Big Bang.
Yeah.
Okay? So that mini, mini, mini microsecond after the Big Bang, we can go back to that.
Yeah.
So we know nothing about the Big Bang itself, other than the residue from that Big Bang. And that goes through looking far, far back in time through our telescopes and radio telescopes. But what was before the Big Bang? That's or what was at the Big Bang or before it? That's the great astrophysical question.
Well, it's that, but it's also, for example, the expansion of the universe, like you said. Like, there's this one guy in his theory. Don't ask me the name of it, but like, according to this theory or whatever, the size of the universe is much larger than we even can comprehend, right? But we can't ever see those parts of the universe that expanded from the Big Bang. So his theory basically says, if the universe started expanding, you know, point whatever seconds after the Big Bang, then the universe would be this and this large. But we can never perceive those areas because of how fast light travels and how much faster it's increasing in speed, right? So, but that still has a connotation of sight, right? So, for example, you mentioned telescopes and stuff like that. These are incredibly helpful in discovering things that we can't see with the naked eye. But this is where it gets a little metaphysical, and some might argue arbitrary, but I think it's still important, and an idea of truth is certain qualities and concepts that might not require sight. It's hard to even think about that, because we're human beings and our entire lives are conditioned, are created by sight and our senses, right? Five senses, right? Or even things like intuition, right? I'm interested in the fact that if there is a concept, right, a sort of thing that is unperceivable by human abilities, right? And if this thing somehow affects humanity, then how do we even deal with that? So I'm going to mention dimensions like earlier, right? So for example, in a two-dimensional being, a cartoon, right? If you were to, you know, have a three-dimensional being go through a two-dimensional being, what the two-dimensional being would see is just a dot or a line move through, or like something very flat, right? But to us as three-dimensional beings, we see ourselves, we see distance and space and spatial relations, right? But to a cartoon, it's just flat. Right. So,
What do you mean by flat?
Like a two-dimensional being is a cartoon. It's flat. If we were two-dimensional and we saw something, like for example, actually, let me phrase this in this way. We're three-dimensional beings, but we always view things in two dimensions. To me, everything is flat. To all of us, everything is technically flat. Right. It's technically flat. And to a two-dimensional being, we see things in one dimension. There are lines. Right. But when we view the two dimensions, it's like a cartoon. You know what I'm trying to say? So I'm going to get this genre real quick. But my point is, there are certain dimensional limits as well.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
There may be a way of perceiving this through a novel that was written in the late 19th century. It's called Flatland. I can't remember the name of the author, but the premise behind this novel is that everybody exists in Flatland, two-dimensional. Right? Length and width. Therefore, if I'm a being in that land, I am just simply a circle. And at some point, a three-dimensional being comes down, and I'll call it awakens, one of these two-dimensional creatures, to three dimensions. And at that point, that circle becomes a sphere.
Yeah.
And that changes the perception entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually very prescient because we're thinking about dimensions beyond ours. Mm-hmm. We know of four dimensions now, right? Right? Time would be the fourth. Are there more beyond that? I guess some scientists are conjecturing that there probably are. We just haven't perceived them yet.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. Like there are more dimensions, at least up to like 12 that can be part. Yeah. We don't know that. That's the problem, right? But like, I don't remember the exact each dimension is, but like, I think beyond is like, if the fourth dimension is time, the fifth dimension, I think is like different possible timelines or something like that. It goes and increases in, that sense.
Like
a time machine, I suppose. But that's where I'm worried about, because even in that sense, and this might actually just me stretching it all the way, even in that sense, that is created by the concept of quantity, of actual numerical and differential ideas of dimensions, right? We understand these topics. Oh man, what's going on here? We understand these topics in the sense that there is a difference between this of a variable A and variable B, and this in itself is created by categories and ideas that are intrinsic in us through evolution or whatever you might believe, right? So this is where it gets the answer is really unknowable because we don't know and we're not supposed to know. It's just interesting to me to think about where, what if instead of viewing things in different dimensions, there might be a completely new different concept that we just cannot perceive. And of course, this is not fruitful in any sense. We can't get to it. We're not supposed to get to it. That's the whole point of the question. But it's interesting if there was a certain problem that may exist in a cosmic sense, in a sense that we can't understand. There's no way to fix it. It's a little, I guess, doomy in that sense, but yeah.
So I guess if we go back to the original premise of the show, the idea of what is truth or absolute truth, I think most of us here in the studio or here in the restaurant, and most listeners can probably agree that we know definitely of four dimensions, right? Everything after that. So that can we maybe a stretch, even consider those four dimensions an absolute truth, and therefore any dimensions beyond that become conjecture that may become truth in the future with enough experimentation, where a theory is validated through that experimentation. But can we call our four dimensions some sort of truth that we as humans, both instinctually and also consciously accept, whereas animals, they just instinctively accept it,
yeah.
Right? Although I'm not sure animals are really entirely aware of time, although squirrels will gather nuts for the winter, right? Or is that more instinct than they just...
Or intuition.
That's a good term for it, right? Intuition, perhaps, right?
Zach said intuition for those that didn't hear.
Yeah, Zach, remember to...
I wanted to say before we should go into a break, and before... we go on a break, I want to mention that I was on a podcast this past weekend promoting this podcast with some new friends I made. How do we pronounce this podcast? I don't want to butcher it. It was Just Botin, right?
The way it's spelled, I would think it's Just Botain or Botain,
yeah.
But I suppose...
I think I heard him... pronounce it as Just Botin. Sorry.
Well, the way
I
you say
it,
the way you
but
spell
it means bot- just talking.
Yeah, so apparently Botain is spelled, if anybody's wondering, is B-A-A-T-E-I-N.
Okay.
I mean, it might be pronounced Botin, but yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, I took part in a debate between myself representing Joe Biden and a gentleman named Gus that was representing Donald Trump. So I'll link that in the bottom of wherever we upload this or somewhere. And in the description of this, how about that? And then you can go ahead and listen to that for yourself. And I believe Sean's going to read a poem for us. And he'll tell us a little bit about that poem.
I can't tell you a whole lot about this poem. I can tell you that the author, Louis McNeice, is relatively famous. He was born in 1907 and died in 1963. And the name of the poem is Among These Turf Stacks. And it has some vague connection to the conversation we've had so far. Among these turf stacks graze no iron horses, such as stock, such as champ in towns, and the soul of crowds. Here is no mass production of neat thoughts, no canvas shrouds for the mind, nor any black hearses. The peasant shambles on his boots like hooves, without thinking at all or wanting to run in grooves. But those who lack the peasant's conspirators, the tawny mountains, the unregarded buttress, will feel the need of a fortress against ideas and against the shuddering insidious shock of the theory vendors, the little sardine men crammed in a monster toy who tilt their aggregate feast against our crumbling Troy. For we are obsolete, who like the lesser things, who play in corners with looking glasses and beads. It is better we should go quickly, go into Asia or any other tunnel where the world recedes, or turn blind wantons like the gulls who scream and rip the edge off any ideal or dream.
Thank you.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. And we were talking about the universe.
Yep, universe.
And this delicious pizza.
This whole bunch of atoms and nothingness. I don't even know if this is real, but it feels good. It tastes good. But yeah, we're talking about absolute truth and I guess the ability to really learn it. So it's weird because the question that I'm asking doesn't really have much fruit to it. You can't really, if you're limited by your humanity, there's really no reason to ask more than that. But it's worrisome in the sense that, like, for example, you know, this is like another conjecture thing, right? But, you know, theory is theory. A fourth dimensional being, seventh dimensional being, a dimension, and it is already the whole problem with dimensions. Some sort of thing that we can't understand affects our world, right? This sounds conspiratorial, but I mean, like, in general, a meteor in the fifth dimension or something like that, right? Something that actually makes certain determinants, maybe even something that, like, changes time or whatever, right? These things might be possible, and it's just conjecture, but it's, at the end of the day, it just tells me that a lot of what we know shouldn't be considered as truth. And if we want to get this into a very minimal sense, for example, we're talking about misinformation last episode, right? Again, this is not going to go into a cosmic.
Oh, I love me some good misinformation talk.
So this is not going to be, you know, cosmic or metaphysical or transcendental or whatever. But for example, it still applies. We were talking about how, you know, different sources of information are fed into the people, right? Whether it might be a professional, like not professional, but a national news outlet, like BBC or maybe a much more established mainstream media, CNN, or independent media, you know, I don't know, TYT or something. And a certain part of the political spectrum, and we would argue conservatives, would distrust the other, you know, the more, I suppose, professional or more fact-check media. But if we're going by subjectiveness here...
they wouldn't be right. Even if they did. I mean, depending on the source, but most likely not. I mean, if they're ragging on Reuters because they said Trump was wrong about something, and they watch Fox News and think that that's the truth, most likely they're not going to be.
Well, this is the problem, though, because when we, Reuters to me is very objective, right? I'm actually a big fan of Reuters, but there's still an issue. We trust Reuters because why?
Because they source their information. Everything is you can see it down to the paper. All the data is there.
But to a conservative and to a conspiratorial conservative, that is all part of the boogeyman. That's all just Illuminati, right? And this is important because how do you convince those kind of people when it's all subjective? Because to them, you can't trust these people in the first stage, right? To them, that's misinformation because to them, they have a different criteria.
Well, they're just wrong. That doesn't make – they might not believe it, but that doesn't make them right. That's the problem. And
it doesn't make us right because, for example, you said Reuters sources certain information, right? Then we would have to go through each one and base it off them too.
And
right.
You can do that.
You can do that.
Due diligence.
You can do that to a certain extent, but you can't do that if you don't even believe in it in the first place.
Yeah, well, then that's where you're setting limitations for yourself for not.
I don't think belief's a matter of when you look at numbers like 2 + 2 = 4. Faith or belief is not an issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's subjective.
Right. Not like people say, well, I don't believe in the theory of evolution or. Even the woman who's up for the Supreme Court, she said something to the effect of, well, I don't believe in global warming, which there's enough information out there that we know global warming is happening. The Greenland ice cap is beyond repair. And it's not an issue of belief. It's a matter of a fact.
Yeah, and you know, data can be doctored to be, you know, to look a certain way. But if it's a direct quote from somebody, if it's a direct quote from the guy that they believe to be the most truthful, honest person, and then they don't want to believe it, it's not about them believing the truth or not anymore. It's about them just wanting to believe only things that fit their narrative.
But that's the whole thing, is with the narrative. For example, you mentioned the direct quote. Look, when you have that much substance behind it, it's most likely true, right? It is true, right? But to a person who's believing in a completely different narrative, right? You might call that, you know, their own bias, and that it's bias, you know, that's bias. But it's like, to them, that direct quote is that really a direct quote? Is that really a direct quote? Because in their minds, everyone's lying, right? Again.
So it's not a matter of direct quote, it's a matter of factual quote.
Yeah. So if we try to communicate with people like that, right, who are in a completely different world, I mean, that's literally what it is. It's a completely different world, right? And our, you know, the way we accept certain facts are dictated by our own conditions, but they have their own conditions, and their conditions to them might be religious, might be fear-based, might be a bunch of other things. And these are, to us, you know, not what was the word? Not these, right? What she used? Deplorables, right? Deplorables. I don't want to say deplorable, although it's a little deplorable, but that's important because those people, and I think it's like a quarter of the U.S. population, I forget, it was like half of Trump supporters who like support him unconditionally. These people are most likely have a certain set path in their mind, and you can't really convince them based on how we convince us as our own people, right? We, as I suppose lefties, or I suppose as common people, even like most Republicans, I would say, are on this idea of, you know, fact-based sourcing and all that stuff, but you can't use those same tactics on those other people. So this, you know, it is not cosmic as in the original intent of this topic, but the idea is, in a cosmic sense, if we're limited by our own human conditions, in a minimal sense, in this political stance, we can't aim to convince people of that nature through the nature that we inhibit. We can't be evidence-based with them. You got to be emotional-based. Because if they're not going to believe evidence, then that's a total different issue.
Yeah, no, it's a matter of, I was listening to a Dr. Todd, watching a Dr. Todd Grande video the other night. I can't remember which one. I watch all of his videos. Also, and somebody else you should check out on YouTube, Dr. Todd Grande. And he asked a good question about, I think it had to do with the Proud Boys, or he was doing one of his analysis videos, and he said something along the lines of, can critical thinking be taught? Unfortunately, it is a really difficult concept to teach to somebody because it's a way of thinking.
I would say that's what our colleges are supposed to do.
Exactly. But when the government,
it's not a matter of like taking a class in critical thinking. It's a matter of learning over the long period of 4 years through various courses how to discern, which is the major problem, discernment. And if we can take a step back, I would draw a comparison between religious belief and Trump belief, or political belief, right? There's one difference, though, or one major difference, and that is that nobody can prove or disprove the existence of God. Right?
Of what? I'm sorry.
Of God.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody can prove or disprove the existence of Zeus, right? If we go back far enough, right? Or Gaia, for that matter, right? And therefore, me as an agnostic, I cannot question somebody's faith. If they believe in God, I can't disprove God. So I accept their belief and faith as that's what they believe. Just like I believe, I'm not sure there is a God. I can't disprove or disprove that. But a political statement, more often than not, we can prove or disprove through various quotes that have been made previously, for instance, or just the facts that stand in contradiction to that quote or that statement. How many times has our president been called to task for lying, for telling basically a falsehood?
Majority of them. More than McDonald's have certain goods.
Right. But see that you can go back to certain statements and say, I that is wrong. It's not a matter of belief. That is wrong.
Yeah.
Right. I can't do that with faith.
I suppose some aspects of faith, like Noah's flood and stuff like that, is of course disproven, you know. But yeah, in terms of God, yeah. But again, these people aren't going based off evidence in the first place. Exactly. Faith is not a matter of evidence. Huh?
It's a matter of hope.
Of hope, yeah.
It's a matter of hope.
Thanks, everybody. But that's the problem, though, because how do you even reach those people if they're not even accepting evidence? So you would have to go off faith. And even in that sense, it's going to be hard because at that point, it's up to them to even just believe in the person.
So maybe it's a matter of going back to the idea of discernment. What things can I prove and what things can I not prove? So I cannot prove the existence of God. I cannot prove the existence of Zeus. I cannot prove the existence of Tammuz, Adonis, or any other god. However, I can prove certain statements by certain politicians are false by recordings, writings, documents, any other source as well.
And again, I agree. It's just that a certain percent of really the world doesn't care about that because they can hear the quote and they'll be like, that's fake or that's whatever. And that's a really big problem, especially with conspiracy theories, right? Look, conspiracy theories sometimes are true, absolutely. But like the stuff that comes out nowadays is like, it's insane. Like the coronavirus is fake or climate change is fake. You can,
yeah, science is fake.
You can throw data after data after data at them, but they're not going to take it because they have the preconceived notion of, you know, New World Order or some stuff like that. So if the purpose is to educate the populace, well, this goes into a much larger issue of, well, if you want to educate the populace, implement free college and push people towards education, of course, and for the future. But for the time being, it's like, how do you get to these people? You don't really want to give up on these people, but if they're not even accepting, not even just the evidence, but a mindset of having evidence, then what do you even do? So an idea that I could think about is, in a certain sense, I actually think this is a very important factor with Trump, at least. Trump's religion, right? Trump is not a religious guy. He is continuously, like, he's shown that he just doesn't really care, right? He's presenting himself as religious to get the evangelical vote, but he himself, it's obvious he doesn't care, right? So I would argue that factor would play a much larger role in deterring some Southern voter than, like, oh, Trump lied about this certain fact, right? If you can show to somebody that Trump is irreligious, doesn't care, or whatever. So for example, personally, I don't really care if Trump cusses or whatnot, but I can guarantee you Trump being weird and non-polite and I suppose off the cuff, although sometimes works for Southern voters, for a religious person, that actually work. And that's not a... So actually, it's for the majority of people in general, but that's what I'm saying. So in fact, I feel like if you were to play off of Trump's religiosity, then that might be a better, you know, better tactic than like, oh, Trump pulled out the Paris Accords, which is good for the planet. They'd be like, you know, they wouldn't believe in the Paris Accords at all. So I don't know. It's worrisome because especially nowadays with not just the United States, but within Europe.
United States.
Yeah, I know. I just said United States of America. But with Europe, for example, the right-wing extremism extremism is debatable, but right-wing, I suppose, ideology rising up in Europe, that's also a problem there because that's the same mindset, right? And that's, you know, we're getting off the course with the cosmic truth and whatnot, but that is fundamentally the difference between left and right, in my view, right? And I still do think there is
somehow we ended up here, ladies and gentlemen.
I think our thoughts tonight has turned to a political thing, but
it's just we're so close. That's why to the election.
Yeah, vote everybody, please. But is it before I hand out to somebody else, it's just like, although I do think there are problems with objective sense of thinking because they are based off human conditions, blah 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 blah. That's a fundamentally big difference between left and right, in my view. And I'm extremely biased, whatever, but on one factor, and one end of the spectrum, you don't get leftist revolutionaries from, like, the backcountry. You get them it depends on who you ask, but usually leftist theory comes from college. Usually comes from some sort of educated mass, right? I'm sorry, but far-right extremism does not come from colleges. It does not come from education.
From what they can understand, the more extreme is like the more rural. Like, I understand how my shovel works, so believe in that.
Everything is much more immediate in their sense, and their consequences thus have become much more immediate. And again, I don't even think that's a bad thing. That can actually have its appliance, but if we as a society, we've chosen to accept a sort of criteria, evidence-based society, right? That's what we've chosen to accept. If that's what we have, we can't, like, far-right ideology doesn't fit in there. Hitler, okay, that's just too much, but, like, fascistic things do not come from, like, you know, let me talk about, like, you know, A, B, and C and how this political theory might work for the individual. No, fascism is religion in a certain sense. There's a certain religious, spiritual, driving pathos, emotion to that end of the spectrum. If you want to call it brainwash, it can be brainwashing.
Manipulation.
It can absolutely be
manipulation in the masses.
And the funny thing is the other person might say, oh, that's the left. Right?
You're wrong. But that's also like being like negligent, yeah. And I don't know, stubborn. I think that's it.
It could be. I mean, I agree sometimes when they say that the leftist media is biased. Yeah, that's true. Don't watch that. Don't watch it. There's so many other sources that are reliable, like Reuters, who should be sponsored.
Reuters, if you're listening. But see, I agree. Like, everything has a bias. Absolutely true. Everything's subjective. That's why I still have a problem with even evidence-based things. But again, what you just said there, leftist media is biased. If a right-wing person says that, it's already probably wrong, because what they mean by leftist is by no means leftist. CNN is not leftist. MSNBC is not leftist. These are centrist, liberal media outlets. Liberal does not equal leftist in the world. In America, it does. In the world, liberal just means socially left, fiscally right. It's literally dead center, right? It's actually more libertarian than anything else. Okay, but you're right. They might say leftist media is biased, but again, because that's not really leftist. That is again formulated by their previous, understanding of their immediate view, and their immediate view is America. And to them, CNN is leftist because they're focused mostly around their surroundings, and of course, all you feed in all the conspiracy theories and blah 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 blah. You know, add a little bit of anti-Semitism, and there you go.
That immediacy is mindset is what is driving everything backwards, and immediately or natural a natural enemy to progressives. Excuse me.
It's weird because, I guess, to be the devil's advocate, but for example, leftism is by essence a dynamic force. It progresses and moves forward, right? And in contrast, the right is stationary, right? In its fundamentally, it's a note and then so nature. And leftism nowadays, I guess post Foucault is, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to reference Peterson here, but it is postmodern in a certain sense, right? Again, it's a whole different issue, but there you go. Like,
the first
we
answer
progress
would be,
so
it depends
far
on what you mean by Jesus.
Well, so that's the thing. So we were really coming, and this is going to connect with the cosmic sense of truth as well. We're coming to a time where we're really questioning literally everything, right? The postmodernists, right? And our ability of like gender, if you want to go to that route, our idea of the master slave dichotomy, if you want to go Hegelian. Like, we are really hitting out very fundamental things. We are nearing, if you want to consider, perfection, right? We're at that stage. I mean, like, if you really want to consider this, communism was, I don't think it was attempted, but there was a shot at an idea of a perfect society on a mass scale, right? At what they thought was a perfect society, right? And I suppose every society has thought that, but I mean, I guess that's really true. But in this sense, it was systematically thought throughout, I suppose, right? You know, Marx, Engels, whatnot. So because we're coming to that stage, the backlash is going to be a lot more strong, right? Hell, I would even say the fascistic movements of the 30s was probably a part of that. We're coming to a time where we're breaking down, in the immediate sense, our entire structure as society, and cosmically our entire understanding of truth, space and time. We go to physics. Really? Yeah. Well, I'm also guessing because of the idea of can we find truth, but yeah.
So bringing it back to the basic theme of this program, we all must realize that we approach every issue with our own biases, and those biases are a result of where we were born, where we grew up, the people we know,
how we were raised.
For instance, I was born in Boston, Massachusetts, of, well, a Catholic mother, Roman Catholic mother, and an atheist father. Dad allowed mom to raise us as Roman Catholics. And, of course, that biased my views of the world until I fell away from Catholicism, not out of any animosity or anything, but just I lost belief in a deity. But there are a lot, that history shaped a lot of my views. If I was born in India in 1940, my views would be different. I'd be a Hindu, most likely, right? If I was born in Serbia, right? If I was born in Arabia, I'd be a Muslim. If I was born in Israel, I'd be a Jew. And all those things would change my opinion of the world and how I looked at the world. The trick is, and it's a really big trick, is to realize those biases and somehow move beyond them. Now, historians deal with this all the time. And I will confess, I have a master's in history, so I have an interest in this historical view. And I would also say scientists as well. And scientists will more often than not hold on to a view. Most scientists, there are some that have almost a religious view of certain scientific theories, but that most of them, you give them enough evidence, hard facts, to change their view, they will do so. And that's what college does, I think. That's what education
does.
Right, that's the critical thinking that college gives you. And now one of the major problems I find in our current society is that most people, first of all, there's two things. First of all, they don't differentiate between belief and fact. And therefore, what they choose to believe, they don't often recognize that as a falsehood. They just choose to believe it, regardless of any evidence to the contrary. The second is that a lot of our society, and this has a lot to do with not just lack of education, but what our social media gives us. And most of that social media gives us paragraphs, sentences,
summaries.
So that, thank you, Zach. So most of what our audience gets, or what their audience gets, is really a pittance of the substance of a certain subject. For instance, if I go online, I look for, I've been looking for analyses of certain poems. Most of all, what I get is these really decrepit little paragraph, oftentimes
decrepit
wrong.
Decrepit is a nice word to use, really.
You know, I find very shallow views of poetry. And it really takes delving into a richer literature to understand certain poems, and beyond that, certain theories. And so I think there's a lot of what do I want to call it? There's a lot of obstacles that are put before us willfully that prevent us from being very discerning beings.
I think we're going to take another short break. I think when we get back, we should do the PolitiFact game, the Truthometer.
Okay, how much time we got?
We've got an hour. And I think Sean's going to lead us out with another poem into a piece. I hope you guys are enjoying the show so far. Stick around. We've got a fun hour coming your way. Here's Sean.
Okay, folks, in shall I call it Radioland? a very famous poem by John Keats, one of the most precocious poets in the English language. And I think this has some bearing. It's called, many of you have probably read it, Ode on a Grecian Urn by John Keats. Thou still unravished bride of quietness, thou foster child of silence and slow time, Sylvan historian, who canst thus express a flowery tale more sweetly than our rhyme. What leaf-fringed legend haunts about thy shape, of deities or mortals, or of both, in Tempe or in the dales of Arcady? What men or gods are these? What maidens loth? What mad pursuit, what struggle to escape? What pipes and timbrels, what wild ecstasy? Heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. Therefore, ye soft pipe, play on. Not to the sensual ear, but more endeared, pipe to the spirit ditties of no tone. Fair youth beneath the trees, thou canst not leave thy song, nor ever can those trees be bare. Bold lover, never, never canst thou kiss, though winning near the goal. Yet do not grieve, she cannot fade. Though thou hast not thy bliss, forever wilt thou love, and she be fair. Ah, happy, happy boughs that cannot shed your leaves, nor ever bid the spring adieu. And happy, happy melodist unwearied, forever piping songs forever new. More happy love, more happy, happy love. Forever warm and still to be enjoyed, forever panting and forever young. All breathing human passion far above, that leaves a heart high sorrowful and cloyed, a burning forehead and a parched tongue. Who are these coming to the sacrifice? To what green altar? O mysterious priest, leadst thou that heifer lowing at the skies, and all her silken flanks with garlands dressed? What little town by river or seashore, or mountain built with peaceful citadel, is emptied of its folk this pious morn? And, little town, thy streets forevermore will silent be, and not a soul to tell why thou art desolate can e'er return. O Attic shape, fair attitude, with breed of marble men and maidens overwrought, with forest branches and the trodden weed, thou, silent form, dost tease us out of thought, as doth eternity, cold pastoral. When old age this generation waste, thou shalt remain in midst of others that ours, a friend to man, to whom thou sayest, beauty is truth, truth, beauty. That is all you know on earth and all you need to know.
We're back with our thoughts tonight.
What we're going to do now is a new game I thought of. Maybe it's not really original, but I've been really, since we've been talking about misinformation and the spreading of misinformation lately, I'm going to read a statement on politifact.com. And these guys, Ashok, Zach, and Sean, are going to guess if it's a true statement or not.
Truth. How subjective, but yes.
Is it, what was that?
Nothing. I just, it's true. It's subjective.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just blabbering. Go ahead.
Apparently, if you're a Republican.
I think we're all, whatever. Anyway. Yeah.
All right. Who wants to go first?
Oh, I think we should just go with Zach, me, and Sean in order.
All right. Hello.
So, true or false? Donald Trump. So is you're going to guess, is this statement true or false?
Okay. Yeah.
Donald Trump stated on October 14th, 2020, in a discussion with business leaders, speaking of the federal speaking of the federal debt before the coronavirus pandemic, he said, "We were starting to get that number down."
True.
I'm sorry. Is the statement true or false?
True.
It's false. They weren't.
Oh.
The the federal debt was not going down.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying that.
Okay, no, he did say that. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Are these statements true, or did this person actually say it?
Yeah, that's what.
So I thought it was I think it can go either way.
Oh.
Okay.
So
what I was saying is, like, it's true that he said.
Yes,
that,
he did say that.
But
yes.
It's false that it happened.
Okay.
Okay.
So that was my fault.
I guess
I'm
that's
sorry.
How we should answer it then.
So I'll let you know if it's the statement that's true or false, or if the person actually said it or not.
Can I go again?
Yeah, we'll give you another one.
All right. Cool. Here we go. How come he gets two turns and I only get one? No, I'm just joking.
So,
all right.
Is this statement true?
Let's guess.
Phony ballots were printed without my name on it. This is also Donald Trump.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, he thinks that some of the ballots were printed without his name on it.
Yeah, that's true. But the action
the statement
is false.
That is mostly false. Apparently, some of it is true. I'm trying to find out what.
What he
is.
Said is true.
He
but
did say it. But
he said it, but that's false.
All the statements are actually.
Yes, he did say it.
All right,
about
false.
Apparently. Right, apparently,
false.
2,000 ballots in a precinct in Los Angeles omitted the presidential race entirely.
Fucking this game
the
up.
The county sense replacement ballot.
Yeah, they're on a river somewhere.
Yeah.
Get a fishnet if you can, so you can collect those ballots.
Okay.
Next up is the Shook. Here you go.
Oh, by the way, apparently people complained that I ate Shook last episode. I'm sorry, I love Cool Ranch.
Cool Ranch, ladies and gentlemen.
It's cool.
Now I'm asking a Shook this question. So, Facebook posts stated on October 5th, 2020, in a Facebook post. A photo shows Joe Biden next to man seen in a sex sting video. Were these posts true, false?
It would have been top news. It has to be false.
Pants on fire, yes.
Okay, yeah.
False.
It would have been big news if that was real. My God. All right, next up.
No, man. The liberal media, they would have hidden it. The liberal media won't tell you this.
See. Oh, that's correct. All right. Next up is Sean.
Okay, so, Sean.
Yes.
Facebook post stated on May 30th, 2020, in a post. Federal law requires people to speak English to be naturalized as American citizens. Is this true or false?
I cannot say whether it's true or false, so I can just take a random guess. I would say, I'm mixed on this one. So this is entirely a guess. All right. I have no idea whether it's true or false. But given our current administration, I would say that it's true. But on the other hand, given the traditional welcome of immigrants to this country, I would say it's false. So I have a very mixed opinion about that.
I think you're right. I'll give you that one because it's mostly true.
Okay.
Because foreigners seeking American citizenship must pass an English language test. But that doesn't mean they have to speak the language.
I guess it depends on how expansive that test is, you know. But yeah.
How fluent you have to speak English.
That's actually a really interesting, good question. How much of a language do you actually have to know before you can say you speak it? But that's a whole other question, really. But all right,
let's do another round.
Yeah. So far, I think we're all we all got it right.
I think everybody got it right.
I do not know. Who am I?
Okay.
All right, Chief. Let's do this.
Some of these are so funny. I'm just. all right. So,
wish
Donald,
what? I was going to say, I wish we had one of those bingo circular bins that you just pull out of like a ping pong ball.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It has a question on
and
it.
And we could get it to make this some funny clicking sound.
Yeah.
So. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Play the Jaws theme song.
So.
Donna. Donna.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Donald Trump stated on October 10th, 2020, in a campaign ad, he said, Dr. Anthony Fauci said of Trump's pandemic response, "I can't imagine that anybody could be doing more." Did Dr. Fauci say that? Mostly false.
Really?
Yes. It says, let me give you this, the truth here.
Let me give you the truth.
A Trump campaign ad uses an out-of-context quote from Dr. Anthony Fauci, told CNN he did not consent to being in the ad and felt his words were out of context.
Yeah, they were out of context. Man, right. These are like trick questions because I'm just like, Trump did say that. That's why I'm saying true.
Yeah, look, you have to.
But Dr. Fauci, it's like the second part of it.
Yeah.
All right. I got you.
Yeah, it's the actual fact. It's true now.
Yeah.
Are we ready for the next one, Ashik?
Yep.
All right.
You're an idiot. I'm an idiot.
All right.
Is it based off Kantian categories?
What was that?
Nothing. I just said it's based off Kantian categories, but whatever.
Sure.
Everything else.
I'm trying to find a good one for Ashik. Okay, here we go.
I wish I was up to date as policy I used to be. I'm like off.
Joe Biden stated, I'm giving you another, I'm giving another Biden one.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden stated on September 13th, Fed on the CNN website. He said, Iran has stockpiled 10 times as much enriched uranium as it had in 2016. Is this true?
Is the fact true?
Is the fact true? Has Iran stockpiled 10 times as much enriched uranium?
No, it can't. No, that's impossible. Well, actually, I mean, there's no way he would know that. It has to be false.
It is true.
It's true?
Under a 2015 agreement, Iran limited its enriched uranium to 202.8 kilograms. Trump withdrew the U.S. from that agreement in 2018. International inspectors say Iran has now 2,105 kilograms of enriched uranium.
See, I know that Iran has increased it, but like 10 times sounds a lot. But okay, sure, all right.
That's a lot of uranium.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, they were already limited a lot by the Obama agreement, but I have mixed opinions on Iran, but Sean's next.
All right, Sean. So, this will be our last one, I'm assuming. You want to do another round? Okay. I've got a lot of them. All right. So, Donald Trump stated on September 16th, 2020, in a pair of tweets, he said, Joe Biden played NWA's Fuck the Police during an event in Florida. Was this true? Did he play that song? Did Joe Biden play that song at one of his campaigns?
Is it a song?
Yes, it's an NWA song.
You know, I will claim ignorance. I have no idea. Right, and I wouldn't necessarily go by Trump's word. I would like more verification. So I will declare ignorance either way.
All right. Yeah, he definitely didn't play "Fuck the Police" at his rally.
For a guy who has Harris as his VP. Harris, yeah, no. Biden is pro cop all the way. Absolutely not. He would not play a song, yeah.
Okay.
This kid served like military or whatever, man. Why the hell would he do that?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. 100 miles and running to Mexico if I don't win this election. Yeah.
All right. So I got one for you, Zach.
All right.
Donald Trump stated on September 1st, 2020, in a Fox News interview, only 6% of the people actually died from COVID. The others died from other reasons. Is this statement true? Did Donald Trump did say that. Is the statement true?
It's false.
It is very false. Pants on fire, false.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of pants on fire.
That's what the truth-o-meter
He's
says.
He's on fire!
Is it true or is it false?
Okay.
No, I know, right?
Let's give Ishik a hard one.
Yeah. Use your brain.
If this happened like maybe like 3 years ago, I would have been whoa, we got police around here, but nothing surprising coming from the most dangerous city in Western civilization. But
okay,
all right.
Donald Trump. Okay, I'm sorry.
Donald Trump is false.
Patricia Mikulski stated, "Never mind." Okay. Facebook post stated on August 8th, 2020, in a Facebook post, in 3 months, Melania took 21 trips to New York to get her hair done at taxpayer cost of $675,000 or $32,143 a trip. Is this true or false?
I would think that's the thing. I wouldn't put it past her for doing that. But that would be huge news if that happened. So I'm going to say, I don't know. So you said taxpayer money was used on this?
Yes.
Apparently. That would be insane news. No, that has to be false.
It's false.
Okay, yeah. That would be way too big.
No kidding.
All right, Sean's next.
You know, just to travel from Washington to New York.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, some people are weird, but it can't be that much.
Right.
What are you getting?
Okay.
She could drive for like, you know, $50 a gas.
I don't think she drives.
Right.
Okay, so. Donald Trump stated on August 19th, 2020, in a tweet, he said, President Obama spied on my campaign and got caught. Did President Obama spy on Donald Trump's campaign and get caught?
Again, I don't know the absolute answer to that, but I guess he probably did not.
He did not. You're right. Multiple independent investigations, including a bipartisan Senate report, determined that Russia interfered in the 2016 election to benefit Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I really hate that scene. Whatever, that's the, but with the Obama thing though, it's
with
like,
the Obama thing.
Obama, yeah. Well, but the Obama thing, the whole thing like what was last week where Trump is like calling for the arrest of Obama, Biden, and Hillary or whatever, because of like what Barr said or something. That's insane.
Because of a what?
I think what was his name? Barr, that one guy.
Yeah, William Barr.
Yeah, what he said or something, or I forget the exact.
Attorney General.
Now, maybe he denied it, but like how Trump literally called for the arrest of like Obama and stuff. It's
yeah.
Like, because of what you just said, it's like, Jesus Christ, like, what's going on?
I'm showing my political leanings, but do you think when President Trump hears the names Obama or Hillary, he starts to froth at the mouth?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
My I think the debate is tomorrow. But anyway, the first debate, the first debate, I don't know if you guys watched it or not, but there was a moment where what's his name? Chris Wallace had to interrupt Trump. And he was like, Mr. President, I have to ask you to stop saying please.
That exact moment, I thought like it was going to get like shut down, like because he just couldn't stop interrupting. It was insane.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah.
It was funny. And he's like, why don't you? Donald Trump was like, why don't you ask him? And he's like, because frankly, sir, you're interrupting more than he. And Donald Trump was like, but he's interrupting plenty. And I was like, come on, dude, what are you, five?
Yeah. To go back slightly with the whole Trump arresting, because he supposedly believes that Obama spied on him and stuff, right? To tie it back all together back to absolute truth and whatnot. It's incredibly dangerous. Okay, because although things are subjective and whatnot, it's scary to have that sort of mindset in such a position of power. Again, the structures of the United States are firm enough, although I think it's definitely being shaken this year to a point where it frightens me. But so far, it's still holding strong. And it's scary to have, because I mean, that's what Trump is, you know, conservative or not. He has a conspiratorial mind. That's very dangerous. Because, you know, although I accept it's coming from a certain mentality, that mentality is not suitable for everybody. And again, that's where fascism lies. If you think your enemy is doing something nefarious, even though it's completely disproven, then, you know, that's what caused a bunch of deaths in, you know, 60, 70 years ago.
People seem to forget about that.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, in 2016, people made fun of a lot of liberals. You know, I'm saying liberals, lefties, whatever, for calling Trump a fascist. And that might have been true in 2016. But, like, nowadays, man, it's just like, it's textbook. It's just straight up textbook. Like, I'll never forget that thing with the church, you know, with the whole protest. Like, that is insane. And when you have a president, forget president, just a political figure in general, who is basing reality off of certain different things. I don't even oppose the mindset. It's just having that mindset in this position is just incredibly dangerous. And, you know, God, like with Obama too.
I'm not sure that Trump necessarily believes everything he says. I get the impression sometimes that he's a boy with the boys down the bar, and he just says things to impress them, even though he knows they're false. And he doesn't think that anybody will
pick up on it
or explore it, that he just says it knowing it's false because he thinks it will buy him votes.
Buy him time.
Right. Thank you. Clever pun. Biden time. Thank you very much, Zach. Yeah.
See, I think you're giving Trump too much credit. I don't think he thinks that at all. I think he's just going with the flow. Like, I'm serious though, because like that would involve some sort of calculation from Trump saying, okay, although I know what I'm saying is false, I'm gonna say it because it's gonna buy me votes.
The boys down the bar don't say things, you know. Yeah. They don't think that through. They just say things to their friends.
Exactly. Yeah.
Bush.
Well, I mean, to be fair, George Bush was already dumb, but at least George Bush, he was entertaining, at least.
Yeah. I'm saying that I think that Donald Trump is a dumbed-down version, like, dumber than George Bush. Like, George Bush had, like, a C-minus average in college.
Yeah.
And he became president.
Dude, that's actually a good point.
I don't even know what Donald Trump got or if he ever went to college.
Actually, I don't know. He did.
He did?
Yeah. What did he pass?
I don't know if he graduated or not.
Right, not social skills or anything like that, or definitely not fucking science.
You would be president if you were. Oh, suppose.
Or human interaction.
This is completely off point, Todd. But did you know that a lot of world leaders are actually chemists with their degrees? It's actually really weird. Like Angela Merkel is actually a chemist with her degree. It's really random fact.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
You know, critical thinking.
So Donald Trump bar hopping 101.
Yeah.
From tower to tower.
God.
We are stooping very low.
Yeah.
A Trump.
Oh yeah, he had a bachelor's in science in economics.
Well, again, whether those grades are actually deserved is a whole different story.
Believe in science. Who did his homework?
Well, I mean, well, again, you don't have to believe in what you study, like you,
no,
just, you know.
Must have paid somebody.
You don't know that.
I know.
You know, this whole show is about truth. You don't know that.
Yeah, don't be spreading misinformation.
I'm saying it's a speculation. It's an opinion. It's not a fact. Yeah.
I'm gonna go back. I'm glad we're talking about Trump, because a certain incident from a couple of years ago isn't kind of tie back earlier with what we said about like information with different news outlets or whatever, or who's the source of a certain thing, right? So for example, what comes to mind is Trump's it's gonna a few years ago, I forgot when it was, but Trump's like health status, his update, his physical or whatever, right? When that extremely weird doctor came out and said, yeah, Trump is healthy. He's the healthiest patient I've ever seen or something like that, right? So kind of tying to absolute truth and who where that source comes from, you know, it's funny because that is, in a certain sense, evidence for a Trump supporter. Because, oh, look, here's a doctor. It's a doctor. I don't care how weird his hair looks. But he says that my president is well and fit, you know, exclude.
What about Dr. Fauci?
See, I'm specifically talking about, I don't know his name, but he was that one doctor with the crazy hair and the eyes who was obviously not very, you know, trustworthy, I should say. But to tie it back, like, for, you know, I suppose this is a comment on overall fact checking, but again, to the Trump supporter, you know, it's funny because even though they don't care about evidence, that was like, oh, look, we're playing your games of evidence. We're playing your games of critical thinking. Check out my doctor. Even though the doctor is, you know, insane. But although, to be fair, there was another doctor. I forget. Murat, you can maybe search this up. It was some other doctor who was more professional, not Dr. Fauci, maybe a year ago at this point, who actually did say that Trump was healthy. I don't know his name, though. I would like to see his credentials, and you know, but I don't know. I'm just, it was a point of about overall evidence, and
I'm checking it out right now.
Yeah, I think he was a short-haired guy, kind of.
So it goes back to the premise of the show. You know, what is the truth of that statement? I have also heard that Trump has been diagnosed, according to the American Medical Association's standard of obesity, that he's been declared obese. Now, is that healthy?
No.
Yeah. So a good critical thinking point, not point, but skill, is conflict of sources and conflict of solutions or you know, conflict of answers overall. And
you're talking about Sean Conley? Is that his name?
I would have
the young guy.
If you can show me a picture, I'd be able to confirm it. I don't know, but it was some doctor who actually confirmed that Trump was healthy, which again, I like.
Oh, this guy. Okay. This guy with the long hair?
No. See, that was the crazy guy that I was talking about.
Yeah.
That's the crazy guy where you would, you know, doubt his credentials.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go to this guy. He looks like he smokes pot and like plays Zeppelin tunes on his git fiddle on the weekend.
That's all the evidence I need. But well, so it was
a health diagnosis.
Yeah, exactly.
So it wasn't him, but it was a guy after his diagnosis who confirmed this crazy guy's diagnosis, which was super weird. And I think, and we know it's pretty much false because of how Trump acted.
You're talking about this guy, right?
I believe so. That looks like what my mind is.
No.
Okay. It was his name, you know?
His name is Sean Conley.
I guess Sean Conley.
The military.
Yeah, that guy. All right. So it's like, okay, you know, I suppose that's fine of evidence, but God, you know, God damn it, there's other. I'm sorry, but Trump, like, coughing at, you know, consistently after COVID is not a good sign. And plus the whole overweight obesity.
That first scientist you're talking about looks like Steve Buscemi and Mr. Deeds, where he's like, Oreos and fries, Deeds, you know me so well.
That guy probably smells like dog food, but
cat food.
Yeah, probably.
Well, he looks official.
Yeah, he looks official.
What, the Git Fiddle Zeppelin?
Yeah.
No, like Zach said, I'd party with him, but I don't know if I'd allow him to diagnose me.
That guy probably has like the best stories. Of like a patient in one night. God, you know who didn't go to NAMM? Trump. Yeah.
Can we go for one last break and then
probably a wrap up with absolute truth. All right. Should I have another poem or should we just go straight in?
I'll be happy to read another poem if you want me to.
Sure.
Okay. Sounds good.
Sure. Let me set up this mic real quick.
Okay, I have a poem. This is actually a poem that I've really enjoyed for many years. It's by Walter de la Mare, born in 1873 and died in 1958. Maybe many listeners have heard this poem, but it's a poem about integrity. But it's also a very mysterious poem and has some, I think...
How fitting. Integrity.
Right. I think it has some really wonderful imagery in it. So if you haven't heard it, I hope you put it on your to-read list. The Listeners by Walter de la Mare. Is there anybody there? Said the traveler, knocking at the moonlit door, and his horse in the silence champed the grasses of the forest's ferny floor. And a bird flew up out of the turret above the traveler's head, and he smote upon the door again, a second time. Is there anybody there? He said. But no one descended to the traveler. No head from that leaf-fringed sill leaned over and looked into his gray eyes, where he stood perplexed and still. But only a host of phantom listeners that dwelt the lone house then stood listening in the quiet of the moonlight to that voice from the world of men. Stood thronging the faint moonbeams on that dark stair that goes down to the empty hall, hearkening in an air stirred and shaken by the lonely traveler's call. And he felt in his heart their strangeness, their stillness answering his cry, while his horse moved, cropping the dark turf through the starred and leafy sky. For he suddenly smote on the door even louder and lifted his head. Tell them I came and no one answered, that I kept my word, he said. Never the least stir made the listeners, though every word he spake fell echoing through the shadowness of the still house from the one man left awake. Aye, they heard his foot upon the stirrup and the sound of iron on stone, and how the silence surged softly backward when the plunging hoofs were gone. Hey, when I'm reading,
thank you.
are back with our final segment here.
Our thoughts tonight. So returning to our absolute truth, you know, Murat, we haven't heard a lot from you tonight, right? So we were talking about this topic, and you said this is one thing that one topic that I wanted to touch on, and I guess we'll take it now. Math. The idea of is math true, I suppose. Is our discovery through math real? I don't want to say real, but like, is math the real concept? Remind me your response to that entire topic. I believe you said it was arbitrary, but
yeah, it's like math. I mean, I don't believe this. This was like, I was driving down the road one day and I was thinking about this. It's like, they're just arbitrary symbols that represent things, but math is considered the ultimate truth. So is there a way, is it an actual truth? Is it an ultimate truth? Or is it just a system we have created that kind of represents what we know?
Well, I would be on the latter side. I think you're literally hitting it on the head. It's just because even something as simple. So I might have mentioned in the podcast. So what I mentioned earlier with 7 + 5 = 12 might not actually be an analytically sound judgment, right? This is very Kantian. It's very controversial. But like, it would go with what you were saying about is math just might be something that is based off our own logic. So for
Max over here looking at this guy like, what the fuck?
No. For example, so I don't even know if I totally agree with this, but it was very interesting when I read it. And take in mind, I was definitely under the influence of stuff when I read this, of the Critique of Pure Reason. But 7 + 5 = 12, this is like typical old Ishik stuff. I'm sorry, but it's typical stuff with Ishik. But I'm sorry, but it's like, to understand that 7 + 5 = 12, we have to understand that things, when added together, equal a new thing. Having that preconceived notion gives us 12, right? So that may be like really like small and doesn't matter, but that rule might not apply objectively. Might not, right? But it's worrisome because if all math is based on this general logic of like causation and addition and quantity and stuff like that,
there's systems and they equal out to solutions. That's why they're factual.
Well, they equal out to solutions because we know they equal out to because we
predetermined it.
Kind of like we know there is no value of 12 in the number 7. No, because it's a truth.
Oh, that's a good question. Zach is saying, why the fuck are we talking about math? I think that is a good question. Can you answer that question?
Because math is what we usually consider the most universal sort of thing.
Exactly.
Subjective.
The most objective thing. And that might actually still be the case. I'm not really set in stone with math.
That's the question.
But like, you know, for example, Pythagoras with his like cult around the number, what was it, 9? Or 10, whatever. But again, look. Then another, I suppose, another question is why doesn't math, right? Why does even math being a, it might be real, it might just be a representation, might not be whatever, right? And I'm gonna bring it to an earlier point I think I made is like, what if we run out of math? I know this is like the most high topic ever. But
this is like the time Ashik was stoned and he was like, we should just get rid of the word the.
No, but I'm serious.
You just made math sound like gas for a car.
No, for example, there are certain equations, there are certain things that, we will overcome them, we will overcome and with our whips on our backs, but like we will understand and we'll try to figure them out. But it's just, I'm just curious about the end goal when we can't go by logic. That's where I'm a little bit.
So let's go back to Einstein. So Einstein proved many of his theories through math. And not until many years later were they proved matter-of-factly by observation. Math is an accepted language that is somebody may contradict me. I'm not sure I'm entirely right, but I would say it's our most objective language.
Relatable to everybody.
Relatable to everybody, yes. So when I say seven, I can line up like seven cups, seven spoons, seven little bottles of Jim Beams, right, on the counter here, right? And I can say, we can all accept that that's the number seven, right? And so it's a universal language. And therefore, when I say 7 + 5 = 12, I think that's as close to a universal truth that most people on this planet will accept.
So it's universal, but it's interesting because you say it's universal to every person.
It could
literally be every person, but my thing is complete objectivity, which we can't reach. That's the big point, is we can't even reach this point. But like, for example, you mentioned Einstein as well, right? A lot of his theories were proven, but a lot of them eventually were also proven wrong. And this is very like creationist of me to say, but like, it's just, and this is usually done with math and with new developments of math and whatnot, of proving certain theories if it's wrong, of certain theories of his that might be wrong or whatever. But it's just with 7 + 5, and I would have to bring up the book again to really explain, because that was the example Kant used in his introduction of the Critique of Pure Reason. But yeah, I use it in one of my.
Like an algebra equation or something.
Well, it would still be the same thing.
Use 3 × 3.
Yeah, or 3 × 3 × 3, right? It's
165 × 32.
Because we have to think of this really conceptually to a point where it's just really weird. Just the idea of quantity, the idea of difference, and separation. And because you need to have that understanding before you even get the idea of 12 or the number 7. Again, this is true of every human being, because we as human beings understand separation. We understand quantity. But all I'm curious is, and we can't ever figure out these answers, but, and truth is subjective, so it's subjective to our species as well. But if we're going for complete objectivity, not that we can discover it, but trying to understand it maybe, is, well, what if it's beyond the idea of quantity? What if there is no such thing as separation? Or what if there's another thing that we can't even... I feel like I'm really high right now, even though I'm not.
No, I get you.
Because quantity is its own concept, is its own thing.
Well, it's a convention that we all accept, right? Yeah, math is just this convention that we all accept as being very logical, and I'm willing to go with that. I and just like languages are the same thing. So if I speak English and I say, here's a glass, right? Most of my audience who speak English, they will understand what I mean. So it's a convention. Math is a convention as well. We have, but math, unlike language, doesn't have the nuances. I could say glass, I could say goblet, I could say cup, right? And those are all variations of this container I hold in my hand that we drink liquids out of.
Horn?
Yeah, if you go back far enough, horn as well.
Right? Viking horn.
Or shell for some societies, ancient societies. But math is a purer language. That when I say 7, I can't say, well, it's almost like 8.
Just one away from 8.
Right. Yeah, almost like 8, but one away.
Yeah.
Right. But that's a huge difference.
Oh man.
And I could say, I could call this cup, I could actually call it a goblin, and you'll still all here in the restaurant will understand that.
Yeah.
But if I say 7 and I mean 8, You won't misconstrue the two.
Yeah. I like math because there's a certainty. And like when you're building something, you measure it out and build it accordingly. You know?
Maybe I'm not saying this correctly, because like math is still universal to... When I mean human beings, I genuinely mean human beings. Yeah. Like just human. Well, it can be like... an animal is not going to understand math and know in any sense. Well, I'm eight, might, I suppose. But like, okay, let's think like some sort of germ, right? Does a germ even have a concept of space and quantity and whatever, right?
Well, I'm sure it has a concept of space.
Well, space, I'm sure, right? But in terms of quantity or whatever, and math is universal, and the answers it provides. Again, if math is a system that we observe reality, I suppose, and if math is itself a system that is composed by our own cognitive abilities, yeah, I understand. It's just... Well, I just want to bring in this point out. It's just, if math is just the lens that we observe everything, all I'm trying to say is that lens, we don't know. We don't know. About the lens. The lens might be blurry. The lens might be clear as day.
Yeah, that's
but
just
it's just an interesting thought,
works,
a
right
thought exercise because, you know.
What's unfortunate, but also maybe a good thing, is that we we most likely won't know the answers to these questions.
No, that's the point. You're not supposed to know these answers. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Most of what I'm saying is completely, like, mostly just mental exercise. But it might actually have some merit because a lot of philosophical things have actually had merit as time progresses. So in the future, we might. But nowadays, absolutely no. We won't have these answers anytime soon.
Should we wrap it up?
Sure.
All right. I think I would like to say everyone follow us on Blog Talk Radio. You can subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts, Buzzsprout Radio.
Any final thoughts like we always do? Or not always, but...
Yeah, yeah, let's do it. Final thought for you guys?
Sean?
Still searching.
I don't know. Read some Kant, everybody. You know, it's... Just read some... You know what everybody should do? This is... I'm not saying names, but I might do my name. Everybody take some shrooms and read some Kant and see what you discover. Zach,
we're calling Zach.
Hey, I'm just going to quote Zach. Zach, do you want to come say your last thoughts?
Final thoughts.
Zach might come here and give us his last thoughts. Zach, what's your last thoughts for the night?
Final thoughts.
As far as this cable. I like math. The shook's overthinking this shit. It's all good. God bless you all. Have a great night.
Interesting. Okay, well, I think that wraps up our thoughts tonight. I think we're going to go with, we have a regular outro tonight, right? We have a regular,
the math. We don't, unfortunately, because we're dealing with some licensing issues.
Shame.
But we will have it. I'll play us out until we can use the Sabat monitor again later. Everyone have a great evening.
Our thoughts tonight.